Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So two more Democrat senators made it official over the weekend. Krakajewia announcing her candidacy. I mean, she sort of did already announce it with that silly video in her kitchen.
Yeah, when she slammed a beer, because she's just like us, Dan. And like, honey, can you bring me a beer? You know, she's got a husband.
She likes the fire water. I get it. Yeah. And then Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minnesota who doesn't like the fire water because, as we learned during the Kavanaugh hearing, her dad was an alcoholic.
Oh.
What do you like to drink? What do you like to drink, Klobuchar? Well, I don't. My dad was an alcoholic. Oh, all right. Well, fine. I have a sparkling water.
Well, she was in this blizzard in Minnesota just, you know, proving how tough she is.
At a time when we must heal the heart of our democracy and renew our commitment to the common good, I stand before you as the granddaughter of an iron ore miner, as the daughter of a teacher and a newspaper man, as the first woman elected to the United States Senate from the state of Minnesota, to announce my candidacy for president of the United States.
I'm sorry, who are you again?
I can't even say her last name is Klobuchar.
Yeah, I'm familiar with her work, and I'm one of the few. Also, it's interesting, the run-up to her announcement this weekend was how much of a horrible boss she is to staff.
Yeah, that one made the headlines.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to work for her because she's mean to her employees. But she went on, you know, about what she's going to do when she's elected president, Dan, not if she's elected president.
Okay.
I am running for every parent who wants a better world for their kids. I'm running for every student who wants a good education.
Yeah.
Yay.
Affordable prescription drugs.
Who else?
For every worker, farmer, dreamer, and builder.
Did you leave anybody out?
I am running for every American.
All right.
I am running for you.
For me?
And
you're doing it for me? Oh, golly.
As your president, I will look you
Thanks,
in
Amy.
The eye. I will tell you what I think.
Yeah.
I will focus on getting things done. That's what I've done my whole life.
Is that like a scream track that just like shrieks at every phrase she utters?
Well, I was surprised. There are thousands of people at her. Elizabeth Warren's in Massachusetts. She had 3,000 people there. And
yeah,
it's
but
pretty much
had,
the same
but
thing.
But she had Joe Kennedy.
Oh. Well,
the kid. Yeah, she's a big superstar. So
that's why they had people. Okay.
Does Elizabeth Warren have more than a 1 in 1,024th chance to win? And is Klobuchar's chances even slimmer? Yes and yes. Elizabeth Warren is done. Liz Cheney, congresswoman from Wyoming, daughter of the Cheneys, Lynn and Dick, was on with Tapper over the weekend because she actually represents a significant Native American population in Wyoming. And this is what she had to say about the good Senator Warren.
You represent thousands of Native Americans in Wyoming. Do you have concerns about the president joking about these horrific tragedies?
You know, I have concerns about somebody like Elizabeth Warren pretending to be a Native American. You know, you're absolutely right. I do represent, thousands of Native Americans here in Wyoming. And the notion that anybody of any political party would pretend that they were a member of a tribe or would pretend that they were Native American and would do it as she seems to have done it in order to get benefits, that is, in my view, the disgrace. And so I think, you know, she's made herself a laughingstock. I wonder whether or not anybody around her is saying, you know, it's time to say this just isn't going to work. Because I think at this point, you know, each time she sort of tries to take one more step to show that she wasn't claiming membership in a tribe or claiming that she was a Native American in order to get benefits, we see that it wasn't true.
Nice pivot by Liz Cheney there. Yeah. She's
Warren's a fraud. I mean, she took a spot away from a real American Indian.
Well, Trump tweeted, that was the reference that Tapper was making. Trump tweeted over the weekend, "Today, Elizabeth Warren, sometimes referred to me as Pocahontas, joined the race for president. Will she run as our first Native American presidential candidate? Or has she decided that after 32 years, that is not playing so well? See you on the campaign trail," all caps, Liz. And so some people looking to be offended were offended by this, suggesting that Trump is having fun with Elizabeth Warren by making a reference to the Trail of Tears, and that's not a funny subject. The Trail of Tears is not a funny subject. Liz Warren, funny subject. But I think that was actually secondary in terms of the fun tweets over the weekend.
Oh, it was fun.
Concurrent to Warren's announcement.
Yeah. What other ones? Because, I mean, when Amy Klobuchar, please correct me if I'm butchering her name.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Well, no, but
she's the female Lincoln Chafee.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. Bye forever, everybody. Bye. You're going to hear her say that, or Saturday Night Live say it for her before we get to July.
She looked like she was in a snow globe, so President Trump called her the snow woman.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought, talking about climate change and it's pouring snow.
But. Right. Yes, the irony lost on her. I thought Rob Lowe was good. Elizabeth Warren would bring a whole new meaning to Commander-in-Chief.
Wait, the Rob Lowe, the actor?
The Rob Lowe, the actor.
That's funny.
Yeah, and then he got shame mobbed to the extent that he decided to take it down. Take the tweet down, that is.
Oh, my God.
Willie Brown. I'll just continue on with the lovely ladies of the left. Kamala Harris, you know, Willie Brown's mentee.
Or mentee.
And ex-girlfriend. Yeah. You know what James Woods calls Kamala Harris?
What?
Heels up Harris.
Oh.
James Woods did that. I didn't do that. I'm just repeating it.
He doesn't get his Twitter taken away again.
No,
that.
Of course. Willie Brown writing after the President's State of the Union address last week. "Make no mistake, President Trump's State of the Union address was the kickoff for his 2020 reelection campaign. And so far, I've yet to see a Democrat who can beat him." He goes on to say, The speech showed, once again, he connected with voters, at least enough to make him a 2020 favorite. "You can't say the same for the Democratic contenders. They all have impressive credentials, winning personalities, and positive messages, but none displays the people personality that our media savvy president has mastered." All right, Willie Brown sort of putting a wet cloth on his ex's presidential bid at this juncture.
Yeah, how long were they together?
I don't know.
And do you care? And is there hope of them getting back together for Valentine's Day?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Kamala Harris's husband would say about that. I mean, I guess we're living in like a post-Bezos world where your friends introduce you to your mistresses and so on and so forth. So I don't know if that works in San Francisco politics as well. Probably does.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, you know, I want to get Amy for America because this is the first time a woman named Amy is running for president.
Right. You nearly missed it with Amy Carter.
Right.
And that never materialized. And so you're, yeah.
Yeah. We'll I got to get Amy. I'll call my friend in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Have her lock one in for me.
I would do it soon. They're going to be a collector's item in the not too distant future. All right. So we've got a Saturday deadline for the possibility of another partial government shutdown. And word out this weekend from Senator Shelby and others is that negotiations broke down over beds.
Right, at detention centers.
Wall Street Journal reporting the talks this weekend snagged over the issue of how many detention beds would be provided at the border for people detained by ICE. Democrats have been asking to limit the number of beds in exchange for meeting GOP demands to build more physical barriers along the border. Republicans wanted exceptions to the limits. So the numbers are less material than the underlying point. And the point is Democrats want only enough beds such that Republicans can prioritize violent criminals who are here illegally or attempting to be here illegally, and not what Lucille Ayard from California calls law-abiding immigrants who are contributing to our country. Well, Well, they're not exactly law-abiding. I mean, they're in this country illegally or trying to get in here illegally. But this is the distinction Democrats want to make, and thus the impasse between the two sides. So, I don't know. It looks like we're heading to another moment of truth on Saturday.
Yeah, and Mick Mulvaney even said so. We have 4 days and counting.
We cannot definitively rule out a government shutdown at the end of this week.
You absolutely cannot, and here's why.
Okay.
Let's say, for sake of this discussion, that the Democrats prevail, and the hardcore left-wing Democrats prevail. It was a Democrat congresswoman who put out a tweet yesterday about $0 for DHS. So let's say that the hardcore left-wing of the Democrat Party prevails in this negotiation, and they put a bill on the president's desk with, say, zero money for the wall, or $800 million, some absurdly low number. How does he sign that? He cannot in good faith sign that.
Right. Well, okay. Yes, true. And tonight you've got competing rallies in El Paso. You got Trump's and you got Beto's.
Yeah. And Beto's going to have a 1 mile march. He's going to start 1 mile from the El Paso Coliseum. And then his speech will be held at the same time President Trump's is going to be.
Why doesn't he go across the border and hold a rally there?
I mean, he might not get back. Who knows?
At the border, Eagle Pass, Texas, to be specific, Trump administration flooding that Texas border town where 1,800 caravan migrants arrived earlier this week. More than 100 U.S. police vehicles lined a one-mile stretch of the Rio Grande River, speaking of a one-mile stretch, in Eagle Pass, Texas this weekend. 60 sat together in one section of the river on a local golf course. The show of force, as Border Patrol calling it, meant to deter Central Americans from illegally entering the country to try to disincentivize these caravans that are at the border and others that are making their way up. So, again, not a fictional issue at the border. And it's playing itself out over and over again. So it'll be interesting to hear the competing messages. And hopefully somebody will ask Beto O'Rourke the simple question.
Yeah.
Should we tear down the wall at the border in El Paso if it's immoral?
Yeah. If the Sadagosa Bridge, just take that huge wall down, and you guys would be surprised at the crime and how it would increase.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
I have PTSD!
On AM 560.
I'll have what she's having.
The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We talked about AOC's GND last week on Friday. But more fallout from it. Oh boy, is there. Yeah, all of the, you know, eliminate cars, eliminate planes.
Yeah, high-speed rail, no more American or United or Delta for you.
Turn California, Nevada into just big solar farms.
No more student loans.
Free everybody college.
Gets, yeah, everybody gets a job.
Government job.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Guaranteed income if you're unable or unwilling to work.
That was my favorite part. If you're unwilling to work, we're just going to give you money.
Tucker Carlson invited Cornell University professor Robert Hackett on his show to discuss AOC's GND. He's an advisor to AOC. And the advisor, Hackett, he said, oh, Tucker, you've got it all wrong, when he was ticking off the bullet points like we did on Friday, things like that you get a income if you're unable or unwilling to work. Oh, no, no.
So
those are.
Oh, she was taken out of context?
Right-wing talking points.
Oh.
Except it's not. As some dutiful tweeters pointed out, finding the source material of what was posted on AOC's website even after it was edited. Mm-hmm. This is from Cortez's chief of staff. Posted on her website, and it absolutely included what Tucker was reading on his show, what we discussed on Friday on our show. Absolutely included it. So now they are bailing water and trying to gaslight opponents because of the ridicule that the GND has generated for AOC. That's what's actually happening. Even the likes of big government press corps types, Jonathan Swan from Axios, The document Tucker reads from is not doctored by bad actors, as this guest claims. That's AOC's advisor. And AOC retweeted, oh, this is conservative propaganda. This is fake news. No. From Jonathan Swan at Axios. He's reading what was originally published on AOC's official website. So just so you understand that because of the boomerang effect, AOC and so many are running for the hills. Now, I mean, I know this is the my truth, no truth era. So, I mean, who cares? Because her smile lights up a room. Maybe we can power America on AOC's toothy grin. Maybe we should include that in the GND. But that's the important thing. And, you know, the important thing are the fundamental economic tenets that AOC understands that provide the basis of these important plans. Let me turn it over to somebody steeped in economic thought. She's got an undergraduate degree from BU, don't you know?
Do you think it is moral for individuals to, for instance...
And we'll get to the billionaire thing in a second.
I think the first thing that we need to do is kind of break the mistaken idea that taxes pay for 100% of government expenditure. It's just not how government expenditure works. We can recoup costs, but oftentimes you look at, for example, the GOP tax cut, which I think was an irresponsible use of government expenditure. But government projects are often financed by a combination of taxes, deficit spending, and other kinds of investments, you know, bonds and so on.
Well, I get that, but deficit spending is borrowing money that has to be paid back eventually through taxes.
Thank you.
And I think, is always the crux of it. So when we decide to go into the realm of deficit spending, we have to do so responsibly. We ask, is this an investment or is this actually going to pay for itself?
So you're saying borrow the money, make the investment, the economy will grow, we'll pay off the debt.
Absolutely, because we're creating jobs.
Yeah. Ooh, it's...
Taxes don't pay for the government. Right. Other investments do, like borrowing and spending money you don't have. Even an NPR flack like Steve Inskeep knows.
Well, that economics is not 101. True. I mean, she just.
The government has no resources that it doesn't extract or print. I mean, seriously, as anybody in your social circle talking about this dum-dum in a laudatory way, is anybody saying, well, oh, she's got big ideas?
No, a lot of the moderate Democrats I know think she's absolutely out of her mind.
Have you heard you've seen the hashtag going around?
No, what is it?
MABA. MABA. M-A-B-A. Hashtag MABA. Make Alexandria a bartender again.
Well, Netflix likes her. I mean, she's hot right now. They just paid $10 million for this 2018 midterm primary election. It's a documentary called Knock Down the House. $10 million for that. It's so strange. I mean, she's hot right now. She's good looking. Whatever. She's a mimbo.
On Friday, she was holding forth the same NPR interview. We played a different excerpt from.
Yeah.
I'm talking about externalities, like air pollution. Well, that's a negative externality, arguably. There are positive externalities as well. But here's the thing. Is anybody that gets access to her, I mean, Inskeep, I guess, at NPR did an okay job sort of, well, you know, bonding out debt is paid back by taxpayers, so it's the same source. I don't know what you're talking about, essentially, when you say taxes don't finance government operations. It's the only thing that does. But okay. I would just love to get her on the show because she, you know, Middle East policy is not her bag.
Right.
But economics is. Big thinker. Okay. Well, let's talk about externalities. Anytime she brings up an Econ 101 term to sound like she knows what in God's name she's talking about, can somebody in the D.C. press corps pass an Econ 101 class so they can meet her on that ground? Let's talk about externalities. Ms. Cortez, distinguish your view on externalities from the Coase theorem, Ronald Coase's work on social costs, for which he, in part, was awarded a Nobel Prize in economics in 1991. Distinguish your view from the law and economics school at the University of Chicago. when it as it pertains to social costs. How about that conversation? She needs to be publicly embarrassed on the merits. And she's doing a great job herself, but I think we should help. Also, somebody doing a fantastic job of embarrassing themselves on the merits is another senator who's not going to be president of the United States. His name is Cory Booker. And he was in Iowa over the weekend, Mason City, talking about AOC's GND. And listen to what he had to say.
And so we have to deal with this. There is a our planet is in peril. And we need to be bold. It's one of the reasons why I signed on to the resolution, a co-sponsor of the resolution for the Green New Deal. And there's a lot of people now that are blowing back on the Green New Deal. They're like, oh, it's impractical. Oh, it's too expensive. Oh, it's all of this. If we used to govern our dreams that way, we would have never gone to the moon. God, that's impractical. You see that ball in the sky? That's impractical. We are a nation that has done impossible things before. And my parents taught me reach for the moon, reach for the stars. And even if you come up short, at least you're going to be hovering above the ground. You'll be soaring, young man. And so we need to be bold again in America. We need to have dreams that other people say are impossible. We need to push the bounds of human potential because that is our history. And when the planet has been in peril in the past, who came forward to save Earth from the scourge of Nazi and totalitarian regimes? We came forward. Who came forward to save the planet from, or continents from financial ruin? We came forward with the Marshall Plan. Uh-huh. Our history is standing up and saying, look, humanity is in crisis. America is going to be light and the hope.
Look, I know Cory Booker's reheated Audacity of Hope rap peppered with grade school bulletin board aphorisms is less authentic than his imaginary friend T-Bone. I get that. But let me just make one point. Two points about what Cory Booker said, actually. One is aspiring to be a national socialist is not the same thing as aspiring to eradicate national socialists, since he made the Nazi World War II reference. Right. Aspiring to be one, not the same thing as aspiring to defeat them. Secondly, as Angel Macon observed, the urge to save humanity always turns into the urge to rule. That's the lesson of the 20th century. You know who gets that lesson? You know who understands that? From a once prosperous country in South America is Venezuelans. And they actually rallied in D.C. last week. The Venezuela Freedom Rally. They want Maduro gone and Chavez / Ocasio-Cortez economics gone with him.
What would be your message to young people that think socialism would be a good idea here in America?
Look yourself in the mirror of Venezuela and Cuba. You do not ever want anyone, not even close to socialism, to come to this country.
People are eating from trash bags in the street. So how has socialism actually helped the country? From the perspective of people who've lived through failed socialism, it's very hard to accomplish.
Yeah, I don't think any Venezuelan can really like socialism because we've seen it put in place very well.
It's not a game. It is not a game. It is not the route to go. It is not possible. It's not feasible. Don't fall for it.
It doesn't work the way the book says it works because we're humans and we have imperfections. And socialism is too perfect to be true.
Venezuelans are mugged by reality. Now, thankfully, luckily for them, in this country, a lot of their family members are not, which is why they're rallying for freedom to return to Caracas and the rest of the country. Randy and Sandwich, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I caught something on the radio that Alexandria said that I think hasn't been reported enough yet. She said something to the fact that I'm paraphrasing here, where that proof that Trump's tax plan is a failing tax plan is because tax returns are down 8% than they were in the previous year. And
the refund.
And what baffles me is anybody that has any clue about how taxes works understands that you're getting more of your money throughout the year, so you would get less at the end of the year because you're getting it during the year versus the end.
Right. Thanks for the call, Randy. Another question that could be put to her, a follow-up to her pronouncements, if there was anybody in the D.C. press corps that has access to her that had firing synapses. Tony on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, Dan, Amy, Lammy Lamb. Hey, check this out. So the Valley Girl, AOC, if, you know, she's so big on socialism, why, you know, socialism's great, capitalism's bad. Why isn't the caravans that are leaving Honduras and Guatemala heading to Venezuela instead of here? That's all I got to know.
Thanks for the call, Tony. Well, you know what the answer is from the socialists. It's just the wrong people. With the right people in charge, with the secret knowledge like AOC and her would-be suffragette friends, everything will be milk and honey.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, you're talking about the women of Congress all hour. Your Elizabeth Warrens, your Amy Klobuchers, your Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes, and all of her dutiful GND socialists.
And SNL had the greatest skit ever on the women of Congress, and wow, they were wearing their white suffragette outfits, and they nailed it.
That's a little, I think that's a little aggressive. But here's,
oh, I loved it.
Here's what I would say. So shrill and unhinged are the women of the left that even SNL decided they needed a little separation.
Once upon a time, there were women, and then they became fed up women, and then they became congresswomen. They fight crime. They right wrongs. They wear white, but they're not all white, and we love that. They're the women of Congress. Featuring Nancy Madam Clapback Pelosi.
I'm so woke, I can't close my eyes.
Alexandria, I say what I mean, Ocasio-Cortez.
You're trying to rip apart my Green New Deal? Leave me alone. I will dog walk you.
Maxine, don't go chasing water.
They call me Auntie Maxine, but I'm going to make Trump say uncle.
Kristen, kooky Arizona lady cinema.
Kooky Arizona lady.
I used to be in the House, but now I'm in the Senate. I'm bicameral, bipartisan, and bi. Deal with it.
Ilhan, get the hijab done, Omar. Hijab.
I'm a proud Muslim woman and proud American. And when Ted Cruz sees me, he crosses the street.
Annie, raise the roof custom.
Raise the roof and break that glass ceiling.
Abigail, say my name, Spamberger.
My opponent thought he could hurt me by saying a vote for me was a vote for Nancy Pelosi.
Uh-huh. How did that work out? Good?
And Rashida, impeach the mother to Lee.
Impeach the mother.
They are the women of Congress.
Aren't awesome. They lovely, the women of Congress?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, checking back in on the Virginia Minstrel Party. Ralph Northam sat down with Oprah BFF Gayle King.
Yeah, I wonder why he chose her to give his exclusive interview.
And look, this is no time for Ralph Northam to step aside.
He's not going to.
No, this is a time for a healer. If you have faith in Ralph Northam, he will heal you.
Well, again, we have worked very hard. We've had a good first year, and I'm a leader. I've been in some very difficult situations, life and death situations, taking care of sick children. And right now,
you're a doctor, yes.
Right now, Virginia needs someone that can heal. There's no better person to do that than a doctor.
I mean,
he's like a faith-healing televangelist.
Have you heard the term mimbo, a male bimbo? Because that's what he is.
I've seen Seinfeld.
Yes. How could any Democrats in the state of Virginia vote for this guy? He is so clueless. And he even
Northam, too, I just wanted to make the point, in addition to his healing power, that here's something that a leader doesn't need to say. I'm a leader.
Exactly.
If you have to say it, you're trying to persuade people who don't believe it. Probably starting with yourself.
But then he brought up the history of Virginia and slavery, which he mischaracterized as indentured servants, really?
Well, it has been a difficult week. And, you know, if you look at Virginia's history, we're now at the 400-year anniversary. Just 90 miles from here, in 1619, the first indentured servants from Africa landed on our shores in Old Point Comfort, what we call now Fort Monroe. And while...
also known as slavery.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like she's interviewing a five-year-old child.
I mean, that's a minor
indentured
point.
Servant. Well, there were those people that came from England who would work 4 to 7 years and then they'd be free and could
that's
become...
the definition of an indentured
right,
servant.
But I'm, right, but these people that came from Africa were not indentured servants.
Understood.
They were torn from their homeland and forced into slavery.
Understood.
Why do you even bring it up? That's why he's so clueless.
It's
like
just
wanting to moonwalk for the reporters.
Just a history lesson to see how far Virginia's come in the 400 years since they were bringing indentured servants and slaves to their fair commonwealth up until now, where they've elected Ralph Northam their governor. So maybe it sort of seems like you're running in place, doesn't it, Virginia? Okay, so you got Ralph Northam. He's defiant. He's going to stick it out.
Although, do you want to hear him say he's not resigning, or we could just paraphrase?
Yeah, I think we get the gist of it. He's a healer.
Right.
And that was an important moment. Oh, well, he's a healer, and look at this. He's also ready now.
Oh, okay.
To take Virginia to the next level, whatever the hell that means.
So, yes, I have thought about resigning, but I've also thought about what Virginia needs right now. And I really think that I'm in a position where I can take Virginia to the next level, and it will be very positive. And, you know, we have a number of inequities in this country right now and in Virginia, and we're in a position to really stop talking so much and now to take action with policy to address a lot of these inequities.
I haven't heard such a promise you could count on to heal the world and have the waterways or bodies of water recede since President Obama. But yeah, Northam is going to make the rest of his term. He's going to dedicate himself to racial equity. And again, as a healer,
right?
Who better than Ralph Northam to bring racial harmony to Virginia? Okay, sure. All right.
Well, she asked him, Gail King asked him about Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who's a second accuser came forward. Person from Duke in 2000, she claims that he raped her, and he said it was consensual. She's hired an attorney.
She knew things were changing when he got up and locked the door. She also has documents, which we have made public, an email in May of 2016 and Facebook posts later in 2016 and 17, in which she clearly says Justin Fairfax raped me.
Okay, well, she saying it earlier and then saying it now is not necessarily corroboration of anything.
Right.
It's her restating what she says happened. But okay, fine. This, again, happened in 2000. They're both attending Duke, as you said. And Ms. Watson has also said through her attorneys that she's willing to testify at an impeachment proceeding
yep.
against Justin Fairfax.
And so is his first accuser. Justin Fairfax has until 9 a.m. this morning to resign, or they're going to begin impeachment proceedings.
He needs to resign immediately. Should the lieutenant governor fail to do so, on Monday, I intend to introduce articles of impeachment.
And Lieutenant Governor Fairfax is now calling for the FBI to investigate these two allegations, which he said did not happen.
Speaking of things that haven't worn well with time, like Justin Fairfax's tenure in public office, Jennifer Rubin's tweet, this is the what the Bezos Post calls a conservative blogger, Jennifer Rubin.
Yeah.
And she's the patronizing dum-dum who tweeted out after the Northam yearbook revelations. Democrats need to move Northam out ASAP. Lieutenant Governor is dynamic, eloquent African-American. So just a little recommendation for Jennifer Rubin there over at the Bezos Post when she's not trying to suppress penis pics of her boss. She could try, when she ultimately revises the celebration of Justin Fairfax, try the next time to not go full Joe Biden.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a thought.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636. Type in DA and then a quick comment.
Are you enjoying the enlightened racial discussions on race relations that you're getting from Virginia Democrats? Are you enjoying the commitment to the Me Too movement that you're getting from Virginia Democrats? Are you comparing and contrasting how this all played out during the Kavanaugh proceeding as compared to these three stooges in Virginia.
And where's President Obama on all this? I mean, he campaigned vigorously for Northam, and he hasn't said a word. Nope, not a peep.
Imagine. Joe on the South Side.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know what? I think there's ignorance on both sides. Indentured servitude was a common practice back in the 1600s. If you guys want to research Anthony Johnson, who was one of the first original slave owners back in 1650s. He was a freed indentured servant from Angola himself. He sued to keep his indentured servant for life and won. Very smart man, never lost a court case, always represented himself.
Okay.
The thing that I find funny is everybody wants to talk about history, except you don't really realize the truth unless you seek it yourself. It's all revised. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Joe. Well, let's fast forward to present day. An interesting piece from our friend Bob Woodson in The Hill over the weekend. And he talks about the race racketeers. He actually takes it. Bob Woodson, again, been on the show a number of times. But for those of you who don't know, this is Woodson Center. He spent his life helping people of all racial backgrounds escape poverty. He was a civil rights era leader. I mean, like a contemporary of Martin Luther King. So, again, some standing to talk about these. He writes this: deciding whether Ralph Northam or other Virginia officials caught up in the recent scandals leave office or remain is not a suitable response to the challenge presented by the race racketeers, as he calls them, the people that want to continue to propagate the grievances for the purposes of keeping their phony baloney jobs, like we've talked about, all these diversity consultants in the K-12 and collegiate level, in addition to the hustlers like Sharpton or Jackson. That's who he's talking about. Deciding whether Ralph Northam or other Virginians caught up in the recent scandals leave office or remain is not a suitable response to the challenge. Misguided goodwill can be more dangerous than actions that stem from malice. I believe the governor should defy the racial bullies and be judged by his actions and record of public service over the past 35 years. Interesting perspective, given who Bob Woodson is. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Are you with me and you want to give Virginia voters the full complement of what they voted for, meaning the current attorney general and the current lieutenant governor and the current governor? 4 years, full term. This is what you wanted, and this is what you got. Because you had no problem with Ralph Northam's race racketeering friends and the obscene commercials they ran against Ed Gillespie, the pickup truck commercial that we played on the show a couple of times, for example. So why join the virtue signaling race hustlers, race bullies, race racketeers, as Woodson calls them? Why not just let it be? This is what you guys wanted. You sort it out. What do you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro.
And how's it going to look for the Democratic Party in Virginia? They're impeaching the only African-American in a high leadership position. But
And what if they don't? Oh, he says he didn't do it. Well, we've been down this road before. Since when does anybody deserve the presumption of innocence culturally? We've talked about this ad nauseum in the cases of Kavanaugh, but many other cases as well, including, by the way,
Keith Ellison in Minnesota.
Absolutely. So Justin Fairfax does deserve the cultural presumption of innocence. And there does need to be evidence presented, I would suggest.
It's a he said, she said situation in both cases right now.
Now, you have a second woman come forward making a very specific and devastating allegation. I mean, both are essentially suggesting that he raped them.
Right. And the second woman, she said, you know, I knew I was in trouble when he locked the door.
So.
But that, I mean, that could just be.
I don't know.
Right. We don't know.
But the point is, well, wait a second. You know, the left is really twisted in knots here. And I'm not. I afford Mr. Fairfax the same thing that I said we should afford Brett Kavanaugh, even though the allegations here are much more specific and frankly more credible. But okay, same thing.
And happened 20 years as opposed to 40 years ago.
But see, you know, now he's don't rush to judgment, says Justin Fairfax. Well, I mean, who are we talking about when he's warning people not to rush for judgment? He's not talking to conservatives. He's talking to his own party.
Yep.
Tom in Blue Island. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Carl. The interest here with me is watching the left bend over backwards to try to either get these guys to step aside or to not destroy their, you know, like their ideas without purposely taking them down. Like, I mean, you know, the Brett Kavanaugh gets mentioned over and over. I think the bigger part of this, though, is it all started with the abortion debate, guys.
Yes.
And I think at the end of the day, that's the seed in the middle of this that they're trying to protect. So whatever they have to do, I mean, Northam and this lieutenant governor, they're just useful idiots. If they can get them out of there without destroying the original beginning of this fruit, then I think that's what their goal is.
Well,
thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thanks for the call, Tom. I think that's a good point, and that's even another reason why I'm fine with Northam staying, because I want to revisit the overreach on infanticide that Northam prompted. Oh, and by the way, as an aside, as you would expect, the battle to see who is the most pro-infanticide governor in the country will be joined this week by Governor Spaulding. There'll be legislation, from what I understand, that will move in Springfield this week.
For what? Third-term abortions?
Repeal parental notification for minors. Repeal the ban on late-term abortions in Illinois.
No.
Enhance mandatory funding by forcing more insurance providers to cover abortion. And also allow non-doctors to perform abortions.
Oh, my God. What, nurses? What, is this the Gosnell movie? Because some nurses that were 15 years old would, perform abortions. Every lawmaker in Virginia, Illinois, New York should see the Gosnell movie before voting on any legislation about third-term abortion.
Even more to the point, every voter should.
Yeah,
so wake up.
Too. Yep.
Tom in Deer Park.
Yeah, hi, Dan and Amy. I guess I agree with your premise, and we just kind of illuminate it by saying on our side, over the last couple of years, the partisanship has become extremely intense, and it's more about what color jersey you're wearing and forget about facts and transgressions. And now the left's turn, and they're even outdoing the right. And so if you've got that jersey on and it's got a D in front of it, if it's for some bizarre economic program that makes no sense, we're going to go for it. And if it's for abortion, we're going to board up to kindergarten. Well, hey, that's what we do. So in my opinion, Dan, and it's the partisanship has gone off the walls, and I wonder if you agree with that.
Thanks for the call, Tom. I mean, I don't know. I mean, partisanship is so ever present. I mean, it's like the idea that, this is the first day in history. We haven't experienced a hyper-partisanship. I mean, it's been that way for a long time. Has it reached a new level in the Trump era because of the vitriol of the left? Does it reach a new era in the 21st century because of the identity politics of the left? You disagree with me, then you're suffering from some ism or phobia? Yeah, perhaps. But, I mean, kind of like if we ratchet down partisanship, that's somehow going to usher in a new era of good feelings? No, I don't think so. It's a culture problem. You focus on partisanship. Political parties are full of cowards. Do you not understand that? Have you not been paying attention, for your entire lives? Most politicians are cowards. They join at the end of the parade. They don't lead from the front. So the partisanship and what you're hearing from both parties is a reflection on what you're seeing culturally and the cultural divide. So let's address root issues, not symptoms.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Just quickly, a follow-up point on the pro-infanticide competition between Cuomo, Northam, and now Pritzker. Story of the New York Post over the weekend. Prosecutors initially charged and included a charge of abortion against the Queens man arrested Friday in his pregnant girlfriend's murder, but rescinded it because of Cuomo's new quote-unquote reproductive health act. Anthony Hobson, 48, would be charged with second-degree abortion as well as murder, but the abortion charge was rescinded. The second murder charge for the unborn fetus was rescinded because of Cuomo's new law. So just in terms of the real-world implications of the pro-infanticide position, thought you should know.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Chicago all the way with EPA. She's got dibs, okay?
On AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The primary for mayor of Chicago, February 26th, just a couple weeks away. And so we've got to get our parody songs in, particularly for candidates that, you know, may not make the runoff, despite what people think. And Bill Daley, I think, is one of them.
Really?
I think people think he's the front runner. I don't think that.
I hope not.
We got some lyrics.
Oh, no.
From a loyal listener out of Oak Park. I don't know if I am authorized to use his name, so I won't. I'll just say loyal listener out of Oak Park. They're very good.
And he wrote a parody song about Bill Daley?
Yeah, it's you'll recognize it. Off of the Won't You Go Home, Bill Bailey.
Oh.
And here's our very own Justin.
Oh, boy.
Voicing those lyrics. I think our friend from Oak Park is going to be disappointed.
Won't you go home, Bill Daley? Won't you go home? You've been around for so long.
Yeah. Put our backup.
You did this 6 years ago, Bill, when you ran. But it didn't last as long as this song.
Ooh. Ouch. Oh, a little pitchy.
And now to know what surprise you want to be the mayor.
He's lost his head.
Bill Daley, won't you please go home?
They're cast congregating outside that studio.
Bill Daley, won't you go home? You've been around for so
yeah.
We're really going to have to invest in voice lessons for our friend Justin.
Well to be fair, that is, you know, from a couple of eras removed from Justin's very short time on this mortal coil. Yeah, Bill Daley, by the way, did you see this story in the Tribune over the weekend? It turns out that, he's not the only, or that Richie is not the only one who struggles with tests. You know, Richard J. Daley flunked the bar.
We know.
Yeah. Right. For all I know, he continued to flunk it until, I don't know, Michael took it for him or something. Well, Bill Daley, man of letters, captain of industry, he also had a problem with state insurance test.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he a state exam to sell insurance in Illinois. He failed it, you know, because he's a moron. And then so to avoid any further embarrassment, it appears that somebody took it for him.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, that's the Tribune report.
Okay. Well, I think Bill Daley is horrible because he's taking Republican voters for granted. I mean, we've reached out to him, and his campaign staffer sent back an email to our producer saying, we don't do morning radio. If you want to come to our office between 10 and 12, we'll be happy to field questions. Are you kidding me? I mean,
please.
If you're mayor, you're going to, if there's an accident or something big, you're going to have to get up early.
Get
in the
a
morning,
hold of
okay?
yourself. Bill Daley gets more done between 10 a.m. and noon than most people get done all day.
Oh, sure.
He's a dynamo.
What does he do?
Just don't worry about it. The question is, would Paul Vallis have expelled Bill Daley from the selling insurance in Illinois for cheating on his test? You know, Paul Vallis, an educator. Why don't we ask him? We're joined now by Paul Vallis, former CEO of CPS and candidate for Chicago mayor. Paul, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, and I didn't take the test for him. I just want to state that for the record.
Certainly not the first time, because we
would have
passed. Yeah,
we got to find the person who took the test for him, huh?
Oh, what about?
I want to tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I love the song. I love the song. I think there should be a verse on hanging chads, NAFTA, which took Trump about a year to fix, by the way. Mm-hmm. And, of course, which Daley was responsible for, probably cost 150,000 jobs in the South Side. And the parking meters. There should be a chapter on each of those.
Well, the parking meters piece, it was a great deal when he made it. And now, as I understand it from his rap on the campaign trail, not such a good deal. So it changed at some point. I don't know how or why.
And it changed in a matter of months, if you remember. So it's not like he praised it. He actually defended the deal early on. And then when he became a candidate, he didn't have anything to do with it, no influence whatsoever, and it was just a bad deal, and he wouldn't have done it.
And his first line of business, he suggested changing the Dan Ryan to the Barack Obama. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, we all remember how they drew the Dan Ryan. The Dan Ryan was specifically drawn to keep the city segregated. So, you know, so I thought it was a little ironic. And you know, he floated that proposal the day I hit him, or the day after I hit him on his failure to file his tax returns, which he still has not released.
Oh, okay.
And I think he released a statement that he had paid, or he had earned X amount of money in taxes for a single year, and no detail. So what is he hiding?
And so how do you, I mean, I don't want you to get in the business of handicapping the race right now, but in terms of like being a political pundit, I want you to analyze the race in terms of being a mayor. And how do you get into this runoff on February 26th? What does the Paul Vallis coalition look like?
Well, first of all, you can't believe the polls, particularly any poll that's put up by the Sun-Times. You all remember that infamous poll they put out having me buried in third place when I ran against Rob Blagojevich.
I don't believe anything out by the Sun-Times, period. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, period. Yeah, and well, the poll at least. But I think I'm in the mix. My polls, the polls that I've seen from other candidates who have shared them with me, show that there's like a 6-point difference between four candidates, and I'm one of them. And I think I'm going to win based on the issues. I think right now the undecideds are leading. And I believe that as it gets closer to the election, people are really going to do their homework, and they're going to ask themselves who can run the city from day one, who can run the city in ways that benefits the entire city, and who has really demonstrated time and again their independence from the pay-to-play movement. And I think so I've worked all constituencies. I've been in every community, and I'm just out there trying to be as detailed as possible about offering my solutions while being pretty aggressive about attending every forum. I've attended every forum save the one or two that I was not invited to, and I think I've seen Daley at four or five of them. And Park Wicklow has ducked forums, Mendoza has ducked forums, Chico has ducked forums. So I'm just hoping in this crowded race, 15-20% will get me into the runoff. Well, and I'm confident I'm going
to
be there.
Well, to be fair, a lot of those forums are not scheduled between 10 a.m. and noon, and so it's difficult for Bill to make them because those are his work hours.
And you did a great job filling in at the last minute last week on Fox 32. When did you get the phone call?
I think I got the phone call about 4 o'clock. And of course, I had a long night. I had been campaigning the night before. And, you know, every night when I come home, because I've been campaigning since April, I have to watch a movie no matter what. At 10 o'clock, I have to watch it. I get home at 12 o'clock, I have to watch a movie. So I figured I had a light night I was going to have a late night the following day. I didn't have any evening events. So when I got the call, I said, oh, great. I'll really screw up this. But
no, you did.
Him not showing up, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait to give the – I always wanted to replace a Daley line. I was thinking about that right after they called me.
That's good.
Yeah, he set that up nicely for you. Let me get your reaction to some of the proposals that were promulgated by – business leaders, public sector union bosses. I really can't distinguish between the two groups in Chicago. So the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club of Chicago proposed a 1 percentage point increase in the state income tax and the corporate tax, talking about taxing retirement income and some retail services that are not currently taxed. And then the public sector union bosses introduced the idea of a 3.5% city income tax for household incomes over 100 grand, a LaSalle Street tax, and all kinds of other fun stuff. Any of those tax proposals catch your fancy?
No, none of them. Well, look, I think the state's going to raise the income tax. Pritzker has said that. I've said that there's ways to make the income tax progressive through tax credits, and you can make it progressive for business, for example, by providing a tax break for the amount of workman's comp paid. And you understand this, Dan and Amy, you know, almost applying it the way they do the earned income tax credit, so you can level the playing field when it comes to workman's compensation costs for businesses. But, you know, the 3.5% city income tax, oh, please give me a break, or the LaSalle Street tax, those taxes will just absolutely kill the city. I believe that we can meet our pension obligations, structurally balance the budget, and cap property taxes with the resources that we have in hand, particularly if we protect our share of revenues coming from the state. And I've articulated that in great detail, and I remain confident in doing that. And let me point out that in the financial plan that I've laid out and that is posted and online, and I presented at the City Club, I don't rely on casino revenues or cannabis revenues. I mean, if those things are enacted, I think the casino monies should be used for infrastructure repair, you know, getting the lead pipes replaced. And I think if cannabis is enacted, it should be used for health and wellness, mental health. It should be used for opioid and drug treatment. And I think not to fund the pension systems, because we all remember what happened when they passed the lottery to fund education that was supposed to solve all of our problems.
And speaking of the,
so I want to be fiscally responsible.
Yeah. Speaking of the opioid problem, Sneed talked to you yesterday, a beautiful op-ed about your son, Mark, who was 24 years old when he died almost a year ago. And what have you learned since the passing of your son, and what needs to be done for the opioid crisis?
Well, first of all, I think I articulated what we had learned about him, because, you know, you really never discover your child until you go through their belongings, you find their Bible, you find their little notes. He didn't keep a diary, but he always took notes about everything. And so you really don't realize that until you go through all his belongings and you discover that you really never knew your kid. But what I've learned over this experience is, you know, I thought I understood the pain and suffering that families experience because of alcohol, because of drug and opioid addiction. In part because I've run so many school districts where obviously these have been issues that I've had to face in the community, but you really never feel the pain until it impacts you personally. And, you know, so I'm hell bent on using every dime of whatever is raised through cannabis, because they're going to legalize cannabis, and really providing the type of drug treatment programs and mental health and wellness programs that the community needs. You know, if they're going to legalize marijuana, let's use it to really help provide the critical social services that the community needs. Look, I mean, my son was able to go through rehab probably half a dozen times, and there are families out there that really struggle and they don't have access to those resources. But it's, you know, I'm more convinced than ever that we've got to be as aggressive as we can, because this is like, and you all know it, this is like it's like the great plague of the Middle Ages. It impacts everyone indiscriminately. We know at least three families who have lost a loved one. And when my son was going through his various rehab phases, and he was a wonderful child, there were at least 10 people that he knew who ultimately died during that period. And he used to talk about that all the time. And of course, I used to tell him that maybe this experience was preparing him to be a drug counselor, because over at Haymarket, he really did. I mean, he was a real asset to them in working with the new residents who were coming in to stay with them. And they had told him that he could stay indefinitely because he was so good at counseling the newcomers. So it's a real struggle. It's a real struggle, and it's caused pain and suffering in all communities and every family.
Yeah, Haymarket's a great group, and thank you.
Extraordinary.
Thank you for talking about your son, because I think it's helpful for a lot of other families to hear it, even though I know it's obviously painful. He is Paul Vallis. He's the former CEO of CPS, candidate for mayor on February 26. More info about his candidacy and campaign, vallisforallchicago.com. turnkey.com. Paul, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The women of the left have been out in full force over the last 72 hours. You get your presidential announcements from Senators Warren and Klobuchar. You get your attendance at the pre-Grammy party by Nancy Pelosi. You get your weekly anti-Semitic tweet from Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. There's a lot of action going on, including the presidential candidates. And then, of course, AOC's GND.
GND.
Green New Deal. You can't forget about that. And she's held forth on a number of important economic topics. She's quite attuned to market economics. She does, again, repeat, have a BA in economics from Boston University, and it's where she learned how things really work. For example, as she described in her conversation with Steve Inskeeper at NPR.
I think the first thing that we need to do is kind of break the mistaken idea that taxes pay for 100% of government expenditure. It's just not how government expenditure works. We can recoup costs, but oftentimes you look at, for example, the GOP tax cut, which I think was an irresponsible use of government expenditure. But government projects are often financed by a combination of taxes, deficit spending, and other kinds of investments, bonds and so on.
Well, I get that, but deficit spending is borrowing money that has to be paid back eventually through taxes.
Yeah, and I think that is always the crux of it. So when we decide to go into the realm of deficit spending, we have to do so responsibly. We ask, is this an investment or is this actually going to pay for itself?
So you're saying borrow the money, make the investment, the economy will grow, we'll pay off the debt.
Sure, absolutely, that sounds good. Because we're creating jobs.
Steve Inskeep, I accidentally said Inskeeper because I think of Ocasio-Cortez as the Christ child.
Oh, and
so,
there you go.
My bad on that. Yeah. And that was following her dissertation, Cozian Quality on social costs and externalities. So it's been a dizzying weekend, in addition to just wrapping my mind around the idea that we're not going to have planes or cars, but we are going to have government jobs and guaranteed incomes and free college in no less than 12 years. It's exciting times. For more on these topics, we're pleased to be joined by Jay Nordlinger. He's a senior editor for National Review and a music critic for the New Criterion. I wonder if he watched the Grammys. Jay, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
All right. If I'll give you like a one sentence review of Childish Gambino, if you want. Otherwise, we can go to politics.
I'd like to hear the review.
Which awards did he win?
Well, yeah. my review of Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
It's just the illustration of the caricature of America offered by Hollywood. That's what his video is. That's what that song was.
This is America.
Yeah.
My son's coming.
Yeah, right.
I had to watch the whole show last night.
Yeah. All right, so there's my one
sentence
review.
Rap is back, guys. That's all I can tell you.
Rap is back? Did it go away?
Well, for women, it's a big deal. Yeah, rap is back.
All right. So there's my one sentence review, Jay. So you can appropriate that for the New Criterion if you want.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So what about...
You experienced it, so some of us wouldn't have to, I guess.
Precisely. You're welcome. What is your reaction to, any of the above? I mean, all of the new women of the left and some of the old women of the left.
You put out a dizzying array. The most endearing thing I ever heard Claire McCaskill say, I think that was her name. Yeah. The former senator from Missouri, she was giving
forget.
An exit interview before leaving the Senate. And I think the interviewer brought up this AOC, this freshman House member from the Bronx. And she said, I really don't get why, and McCaskill said, I really don't get why she is the thing. I love that sentence. I have borrowed that language. She is the thing. And she's just a freshman House member, and she's made this great big splash. And she seems to be not ready for prime time at all. Yeah. And she makes the Democratic Party as a whole seem unserious. But because she's popular on social media and so on, I think some of the wiser heads, and there are wiser heads, are reluctant right now to slap her down because she has this, she's a kind of heroine, almost a cult figure.
Right. But so much so that Netflix bought her documentary for $10 million, which is insane.
Incredible.
But don't you think this new Green Deal, though, is a gift for Republicans because her ideas are so crazy and not, you know, supported financially?
A great gift. So you can say to regular Republicans and conservatives and right-leaning independents, look, you may have your reservations about Trump, but this is what the other side is offering. It's extreme and nuts and not in accord with American traditions. A huge gift to Republicans. It's true.
Well, and even and it's not even real. I mean, it's about as real as Cory Booker's imaginary friend T-Bone, right? Your colleague, Jonah Goldberg, writing in the New York Post, makes the point that's sort of lost in this, that what she proposed, by the way, and then now she's lying about as they're trying to revise it in real time. What she proposed, though, is just a resolution. Even if this resolution were to be voted up by the House, even by the Senate, it doesn't trigger anything. This is all just virtue signaling about, you know, a better tomorrow where we're going to collectively save humanity somehow, some way.
Yeah, that's right. Most of this is symbolic, and she's just a House freshman. And it probably won't go anywhere, but it's indicative of a mentality. And the Republicans are able to say, look, you want these people in charge? Well, then you can kiss our prosperity goodbye. And I do have a comment, if I may, about you mentioned this Minnesota congresswoman.
Oh, yeah.
Who is tweeting those lovely things. I think her case is, on one hand, outrageous, but on the other, tragic. Because to me, it's sort of thrilling to have a one-time refugee in Congress, a Muslim woman refugee in Congress. That's a classically American story. And she turns out to be the way she is, which is a letdown for a lot of people. And I think it's a great shame. Her fans, so to speak, deserve better, and we all deserve better. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. And he's talking about Ilhan Omar, the representative from Minnesota, who again was tweeting out anti-Semitic statements this weekend, suggesting that people who support Israel are, you know, bought and paid for, wholly owned subsidiaries of AIPAC and other such things. And it's not, this isn't, the problem is, as you're pointing out, Jay, is this is not a one-off. This has been during her candidacy, this has been in her past, and now it's been during her brief tenure as a congresswoman.
Yeah, she's quite young, I think, and she might grow up, and she's entitled to her views, and Israel should not be off limits where criticism is concerned. But this woman seems to be just way, way, way off base, and I personally am sorry about it, because in other respects, her story is inspiring. And then when the rubber meets the road, when she's sworn in, we get this garbage.
You mentioned that AOC's GND is a great gift to Republicans. What about the pro-infanticide positions of Governors Cuomo and Northam, to say nothing of, you know, all the blackface business? By the way, coming this week, if you haven't heard, will be similar legislation in Illinois under our Governor Spaulding. So, but what about that? The overreach on, you know, abortion on demand all the time, outside of the womb, taxpayer funded. And that's not where the majority, even of those blue states, finds themselves.
Well, I think that's right. I was saying the other day that if the Democrats offer socialism and infanticide, they will lose. I hope they will lose and deserve it. This is... I remember thinking that, I think back to the 1992 presidential election, and I didn't like Bill Clinton very much, and that is the understatement of the whichever century we're in, both centuries, let's call it.
Okay.
But my goodness, you look back on what Clinton believed, at least what he said, it seems like the soul of moderation and common sense compared with now. And this, about partial birth abortion, Senator Moynihan said, my gosh, it's tantamount to infanticide. And here, I think in these cases, we're not talking about partial birth abortion. We're talking about something more like born alive, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. And this is, to me, this is just bone-chilling stuff.
Well, and it also speaks to how much things have changed, as you're sort of getting to. In 2002, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, now there was no enforcement mechanism in it, so this is why, in part, you got this vote. But still, 98-0 in the U.S. Senate, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act passed in 2002, including with the votes of Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy. Today, even if it was a resolution, you wouldn't get Democrats on board for that, most of them.
There is an extremism on abortion. I think pro-choice or pro-abortion people sense that all of this is a kind of house of cards. And if you make one concession, one little concession on something like partial birth, on parental notification, something like that, if you give an inch, the whole thing will come tumbling down. I'm not sure they're wrong about that, by the way, because it has the effect of making people examine abortion more closely. I did many, many years ago, but lots of people have. This is a major issue, and other things come and go, including presidential candidates and foreign policy issues. But this thing, abortion, has been a stubborn, stubborn American issue, certainly since Roe v. Wade in 1973. And who knows what the resolution will be?
He is Jay Nordlinger, senior editor for the National Review, music critic for the New Criterion. You can look forward to his review of my review of Childish Gambino, I'm sure, in the New Criterion.
Already a thumbs up. As those great Chicagoans, Ebert and Siskel would have done, two thumbs up. I'm giving you both.
Thank you. Jay Nordlinger, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
And that's the Rascal Flatts version.
Oh,
where's the Tom Cochran original?
No, it's fine. This is fine.
Yeah. All right. Ranking Chicago's highways. This is going to one of the funniest things you'll read if you read it. And I'll read it in part for you.
I'm a Kennedy girl, but I'll listen.
We'll get you. This is from BarstoolSports.com.
Oh, yeah. They're the best.
Misery can be defined as commuting to work. I don't care what your job is, how you get there, how long it takes. Commuting effing blows, and there's no getting around it. Even if it's a good commute, it blows. They all blow. There's no such thing as a good commute. That said, there's a special kind of suck to commuting in Chicago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you the worst one. The suckiest one, as you want to know.
He ranks the top 10.
Let me guess.
From 10 to 1. What is yours, according to you?
The Eisenhower. Is the worst. Second is the Stevenson.
Eisenhower is number one.
Thank you. Always crowded. Always a pain in my butt. And I don't know those drivers. Like, I know the Kennedy.
Here's the description of the Eisenhower offered by blogger Carl at BarstoolSports.com.
Yeah, what a...
Number one, Eisenhower. Active shootings? Check. A decade worth of construction? Yep. How about one merge lane from the south? How about every inbound ramp after Sacramento being closed? How about the Hillside Strangler, a.k.a. when three major expressways all merge into one gigantic cluster
plane.
Tollway? Yep. Overall, 290 is the single worst commuting experience known to mankind. It's extremely dangerous, and save for about 3 hours an entire day, the thing is completely effed start to finish. There is literally construction everywhere. Blue line, exit ramps, merge lanes, express lanes. God help anyone who has to rely on 290 in any regular capacity that has no identity, no soul, and will do nothing but crush your spirits. Don't take the job that requires you to use this as your regular route to work, and in return, you can thank me for not hating your life.
Or you could take Grand Avenue, but yeah, it's a hot mess. Or Roosevelt. Number two, the Stevenson. Am I right or am I wrong?
Number two, we'll go to his power rankings. He has the Kennedy.
Oh, no.
Stevenson comes in at fifth.
What?
Yeah.
The Kennedy, you know, if you're a Kennedy person, like I am, you know ways around. You get off at Nagel sometime, get off at Austin. You can work your way around the Kennedy and then get back on the Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. The Stevenson, since you've asked, ranked fifth. You can quibble about the rankings.
What's his?
The Stevenson is no exception to the cringeworthy highways. Every time you get on going south from the city, you think you're smooth sailing the first 3 miles. Happens to everyone because, newsflash, the only exits are for industrial businesses and no one uses them. So what you have is everyone rushing into what is the greatest sea of red lights you will ever see. Four sweeping lanes with several merge lanes flanking bumper-to-bumper traffic. That, and I feel like it's always dark when I'm on 55. Could be 1 p.m. in mid-June. It's pitch black on 55.
It's so true.
Another thing is that one out of every two cars is a nice four-door sedan heading out to Hinsdale for an early day home from work. I hate these a-holes. I hate 55.
And then I-55 gets dangerous near Weber Road because you got the truckers and then you have, it's just bad.
Now, coming in at 10th is my personal favorite, not because it's the worst, but because I find this to be the best description of the 10 thoroughfares he ranked, the Dan Ryan, including the Skyway. You ready for the Dan Ryan description?
The Dan Ryan, you got to go faster. You're going to get killed. And that, I'm not kidding you.
You are on the crab on this one. The wild, wild west of United States Interstate. There is no speed limit and only one rule. Get the F out of other people's way.
Or they might shoot you. Yeah.
The Ryan is flanked by some of the most dangerous neighborhoods in America. And God help anyone dumb enough to take Google Maps suggestion to get off at 47th and cut through some quaint side streets.
Oh my God.
No, thanks. This is an all gas, no brakes stretch of highway. And you better respect it. Bonus points, it is impossible to get a speeding ticket on the Dan Ryan.
No, I've never seen a cop there in my entire life.
Pure lawlessness. Same time, it would be nice if the Skyway didn't close that Mickey D's because every good trip to the Horseshoe Casino involved at least one, most likely two stops on the dollar menu. That was a special place. I agree.
Yeah, it was every so cool because it's right in the middle, too. So you'd go through the toll on the Skyway and then park right to your left. It was a little haven. It was the best medium in the world.
check it out. I'll tweet it out at barstoolsports.com. Mm-hmm. He's got 355. He's got 57. He's got 88. He's got 294. He's got 80. He's got the Edens. And the descriptions are uproariously accurate.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
No, not you. Not you. Your organization's terrible.
An AM 560.
You are fake news.
The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. I did tweet out that ranking of Chicago highways. If you want to have a cathartic laugh, you want to read the descriptions Barstool Carl offers at barstoolsports.com. Good stuff. This bad stuff, but good stuff. Michael Hodge. Remember that name, Michael Hodge? He was the Covington Catholic School kid who was initially identified as the kid who was standing nose to nose with Nathan Phillips at the Lincoln Memorial site. Misidentified. It wasn't him. He wasn't even on the trip. But it didn't stop him and his family from being doxxed. It didn't stop the Marxist mob from contacting Cincinnati State and trying to pressure them to withdraw or reject his application to the school's culinary arts program.
Okay.
It didn't stop them from going after his family's business because that's what the Marxist mob does. And so this interesting story from the Cincinnati Inquirer, doxed Covington Catholic Senior helped raise $21,000 for nonprofit refuge. This is Michael Hodge. Telling the Cincinnati Inquirer, it was crazy to see all the people, you know, be so quick to judge. He and his family members presented a check to Cindy Karras and the Mary Rose Mission this past Friday, despite the fact that hundreds of people sent hurtful things, threats to Hodge. Dozens more made harassing calls to his mother, and police officers had to escort Hodge to school for those first few days back after the incident at the Lincoln Memorial. Hodge's passion for culinary arts led him last summer to prepare and serve meals to, this is the way the press corps reports it, food insecure individuals at Mary Rose Mission, people that were hungry at the Mary Rose Mission, which is a Catholic nonprofit in Florence, Ohio. Food insecure, goodness sakes. About 6 years earlier, Hodge's father, John Hodge, had offered engineering and architectural advice and a free inspection through his company, Century Construction.
That's nice.
To the Mary Rose Mission during the renovation of their 100-year-old structure. And this is, you know, they targeted his father's construction company during the height of the mob action. With donations made by check through a GoFundMe page the family set up, they raised more than $20,000 for this mission. He said of the atmosphere at Covington Catholic, it's mostly returned to normal. This is Michael Hodge talking, this 18-year-old kid. I'm going to be optimistic. Just with anything good can come out of it. So they misidentified him by name. They misidentified his character. And I'll look forward to the heartfelt apologies from all of those sentimental barbarians, Marxists, who attacked Hodge, his family, his family's livelihood, right? All of those internet heroes, those Twitter cowboys, the reckoning. For more on this topic, he wrote about it at the time. I thought a very good piece. Rusty Reno, he's the editor at First Things, firstthings.com, and he joins us now. Rusty, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure to be with you, folks in Chicagoland.
So you wrote a piece we talked about a little bit on the show during the furor after that incident at the Lincoln Memorial. And one of the things you said, sort of revisiting something you've written about before, which I've repurposed and pretended is my own. I'm just kidding. I give you credit. The bigot baiting, the solidarity and marginality. And you were essentially arguing that with this Covington Catholic incident, that it's time, really time, as if it weren't before, but now it's really time to stand up against the bigot baiting and go on offense.
Yeah, I mean, since when is it a presumption that a teenage boy from the Midwest wearing a MAGA hat is a racist? And this is, obviously a repurposing of the racist charge to serve naked partisan purposes. And it's only going to get worse, I'm afraid.
And so, what do you suggest? People in the Covington Catholic family position or others that witness this, what should they be doing? What should they be doing within the circles of influence in which they exist? What can the average Joe and Sally do out there?
Well, first thing is do no harm. don't jump on the bandwagon. Wait. Get the facts. Get the information. This rush to sort of join the lynching mob by the part of the bishop of Covington and, the school administrators, that's really shameful to my mind.
Well, what could they have done differently?
We just got to prevent doing that. We just got to stop doing that.
Right. Well, where do you think the chaperones are to blame at all? I mean, they weren't around when this was going on, and if they were there, I think, and if adult was there, they would have stopped, I think, him from facing off with a Native American Indian.
No, I mean, I watched the whole, 60-minute long tape that was filmed from the Black Israelite perspective, and it struck me I was heartened by it. We've got a kind of crazy quilt country, a lot of different people, some marginal people like the Black Israelite crowd is taunting the kids. They took it in good spirit. If I was sending my son to Washington, D.C., for the March for Life, part of what I want from Covington, Kentucky, I want to get him a taste of the big wide world out there. And I thought the kids handled it very well. And I thought their chaperones, we don't want to protect our children from everything all the time, 24/7. It's really the leaders of our country who are absolutely hysterical, that are driving us into a ditch. It's not ordinary people, whether it's the grown-ups or the kids.
Speaking of the leaders of our country, and let's move to the other side of the ledger, conservatives. Your colleague at First Things, Daniel McCarthy, has an interesting piece in First Things about a new conservative agenda in the Trump and frankly, post-Trump era he's really talking about. And he essentially picks up on some of the broad strokes Trump has painted and says, among other things, he talks about sort of the America First approach. He says, talks about conservatism that takes account of the different needs of different walks of life and regions of the country, serving the whole by serving its parts and drawing them together. In the past, the challenge was to harmonize farmers, urban capital, labor. The challenge now is to balance those groups with the post-industrial classes as well and to strengthen the productive economy against the largely fictional economy of administrators and clerks. He essentially says we need to be more national in focus than economic in focus. And that's, I think, what he's describing in terms of stitching this tapestry together. Do you agree with that sort of agenda for a new conservative philosophy approach?
Yeah, I do. I think we need to, when it comes to these cultural issues like racism and so on, we need to think the best of our neighbors, not the worst. And then we also need an economy where a high school educated American can flourish. And we don't have that right now. You know, I live in New York, and New York is a place that has won big time in the global economy. That's great. That's good. But we need to make sure that the winnings are spread broadly throughout our society.
And so then the argument becomes, what's the method of distribution? Because, of course, somebody hears that and they would say, well, that's exactly what Ocasio-Cortez and the Democrat Socialists are saying.
Well, one of the most important parts of the tax bill was the elimination of the state and local tax deduction, or at least the dramatic reduction in places like New York. Now, I feel it. I'm going to be feeling it at tax time. But it's good policy because the places that are hurt the most are places that have done well in the global economy. And so now if you're thinking of opening a branch office of your bank or your insurance company or whatever, you might consider Chattanooga or Peoria or something like that as an alternative to New York or San Francisco. And that's what we need. We need to have businesses have incentives to expand all throughout the country, not just on the rich coasts.
Well, they shouldn't come to Illinois.
No, right. Illinois would be
up there with
camp
New York
with California and New York. Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
You're preaching to the choir.
Indianapolis, then.
Yes, exactly. I want to go back to the bigot baiting and solidarity and marginality approach of the left that you've written eloquently about. What would you say the approach should be for conservatives in addressing, like, what's going on in Virginia with all of the upper echelon Democrats suffering either a race problem or a Me Too problem? Should we just watch and let the cultural Marxist left cannibalize itself, or is there something we can do to address intellectually, persuasively, the bigot baiting and the solidarity and marginality rap that they put out?
Yeah, I think the atmosphere of constant attack is very harmful to our country. And so while I find Northam odious for the sorts of things he said about abortion and infanticide, that to me is far, far more scandalous and far more relevant politically than what he did as a medical student 30 years ago. And so I think we should not be adding our voices here. In fact, instead, we should be urging our fellow citizens to adopt, you know, a more sensible and more forgiving approach to given human nature. Now, the sexual assault charges are different. They're more recent, and they may involve criminal acts. And obviously, our elected officials should be held accountable for that.
He is Rusty Reno. He's the editor at First Things, firstthings.com, one of those outlets you should read regularly. Rusty Reno, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
A pleasure. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, so I don't go to massage parlors. I don't pretend to be a cop. I don't extort people, and I don't file false police reports. So I don't understand what Proko Joe would have to say in my direction that would be complimentary.
Well, I talked to him last night because I want to, you know, try and get to the bottom of why this police report was filed after. I'm sure I do have to remind you of the story. Proko Joe allegedly filed a false police report. Chicago police are investigating. That's what they told me.
First ward alderman, Proko Joe Marine.
Yeah, Proko Joe. And he,
Chick-fil-A does not represent Chicago values. You will rent to the double door at this price. Otherwise, I'm going to have your building rezoned and make it almost valueless for your family, which he did do. That's called extortion.
That's called extortion. And still Kim Fox hasn't moved on it. And I talked to
somebody
from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. They said, it's all there, Amy. Someone's just afraid to pull the trigger.
And he's right. He rides shotgun with Danny Solis when they go get their knobs polished at the massage parlors.
He said, Amy, I talked to Proko Joe. He said, it was a huge misunderstanding. I look forward to setting the record straight, but I can't right now.
Oh, of course. Pending investigation.
Well, I told him, I said, well, this is one theory that I heard from a police sergeant on the Northwest side. That because he drinks a lot, Procojotos.
Sure,
so I said
course.
To him, I said,
yeah, drunk.
Is it possible that you drank yourself to oblivion one night and were trying to find your car the next day? You couldn't find it, so you reported it stolen. Is that part of this understanding? Because I thought I was onto something, but he said, no, I can't.
And you couldn't remember that you had loaned it out to somebody a month earlier.
That's a well, people do that all the time. Sometimes
sure.
when they drink, they can't remember where they put their car, so
blind
they call
yeah.
and report it stolen.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
That'd be a great defense.
Wouldn't nab on that, but I thought that was feasible. Then I, you know, he said that he'll call me first when he finds out.
Oh, fantastic.
What's going, you know, when he can talk. But he said that he is an attorney. They called Chicago police, and police said they haven't called him back to interview him about it, and that this is a low priority for them. So this is what I'm thinking. After the election, then maybe they might talk to him.
If he wins.
And also his challenger.
And if he doesn't win, if he wins, then they'll just bury it because that's called aldermanic privilege. Now, did he ask you, hey, look, I know you still have a kid in grade school. There's still the opportunity for a magnet school. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Read between the lines?
Yeah, no.
You're free on Friday night? Did he do that? Because old habits die hard. Yeah.
But he did compliment you, Dan.
Yeah.
He said that he thought it was really cool how you took Alderman Brendan Riley to task on Twitter. He remembered that. He goes, that was so cool. He kept going, and they kept going back and forth. It was just amazing, the Twitter interaction those two had.
Yeah.
He really got under his skin.
I love taking little bitch feudal lords to task wherever I can. And if it's just social media because they're afraid to come on this show or afraid to have a conversation in person, then that's what I'll do. I don't accept his compliment.
Oh, okay. Well, back to Procojotos,
you know why?
And Chicago police. No, why?
Because he's a scumbag.
Well, I just, you know, the fact that they're not, they have it, this is an open and shut case, and they're not moving on it, isn't just another disappointment for me, for the city of Chicago that we live in. And also his,
and we love it! More of the same! Bill Daley in 2019.
Oh, stop. And his challenger, by the way, we've offered to come on the show, won't come on.
Why? He's afraid that he's going to be rousted by Procojotos Moreno?
I don't know. I'll find out more. I'm on it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Your time, right? I got the blue. From my head down to my shoes.
Dan and Amy, you watched the Grammys and you didn't tell me that Buddy Guy won a Grammy.
Oh, I thought you knew that. Diana Ross performed, Buddy Guy won a Grammy.
I didn't watch it.
Dolly Parton had a 10-minute tribute where she sang with 10 different stars.
We're talking about Buddy Guy here. We're not talking about inferior artists, although Diana Ross was great. But Buddy Guy, blues legend Buddy Guy, Chicago's very own Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
Love it. I'm glad he won. I'm glad to hear that he won. And
all
he's
right.
still kicking strong. You know, do you ever go to Legends?
I have been many times. I've met Buddy Guy many times.
When was the last time you went?
God, in 2005, maybe.
Okay.
Time
for a return trip. Spent the night there. It's a bar.
Evening. Well, I'm at the evening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I slept over. Buddy Guy and I, we sweep over. No, I just went and interviewed him and watched, and it was great.
All right.
Why are you giving me this stink eye over there?
Go to Legends and see Buddy Guy's new
what
Grammy and support
Mines?
Blues in Chicago.
Is that still on? Is that up?
Come on.
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Been there a few times. Nick Pellegrini.
Legends is where you want to go. Blues on Halstead.
All right.
But Legends. He's Buddy Guy.
All right.
I don't even have to say anything else. It's just Buddy
and
Guy.
And Buddy Guy donated $500,000 to former Alderman Bob Fioretti.
For his mayoral campaign.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I told Bob, I'm just glad to hear that Buddy Guy's got that kind of scratch to throw around. A lot of those old blues guys, even one of the most successful ones in history, like Buddy, mm-hmm. you know, didn't clean up financially. So it's great that he's in a position where he can do that. Not that that's where I put $500,000, but hey, it's his money and do whatever that he wants. All right. I got a sort of a general question for you with all these things swirling around at the same time. Where do you think the left is overreaching the most? Four topic areas. The border, AOC's GND, the Green New Deal, the war on the wealth, the wealthy, war on wealth and the war on the wealthy, or infanticide, abortion. Those four categories again.
Or what about the war on President Trump?
Yeah, but that's all, no, that's all kind of bound up in these.
Warren kept saying over the weekend that he's going to get arrested. He's not going to be around in 2020.
What, right? Pro forma pablum from the left. I'm talking about categorically issues where they are so far out of step with the majority of Americans. Infanticide, A. I'll do it in reverse order. The war on the wealthy.
B.
B.
AOC on GND, C.
Right. And?
And D is the border.
The border. And E, if you can.
All of the above.
If you can make the argument, which I can. E is all of the above.
312-642-5600 is our Turnkey DebPro answer line. 646-36. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
When I'm saying overreaching, I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Cory Booker in Iowa on AOC's GND.
And so we have to deal with this. Our planet is in peril, and we need to be bold. It's one of the reasons why I signed on to the resolution, a co-sponsor of the resolution for the Green New Deal. And there's a lot of people now that are blowing back on the Green New Deal. They're like, oh, it's impractical. Oh, it's too expensive. Oh, it's all of this. If we used to govern our dreams that way, we would have never gone to the moon. God, that's impractical. You see that ball in the sky? That's impractical.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
We are a nation that has done impossible things before. And my parents taught me reach for the moon, reach for the stars. Even if you come up short, at least you're going to be hovering above the ground. You'll be soaring, young
man.
That's
my third grade gym teacher told me.
And so we need to be bold again in America.
When you were doing the
We need to have dreams that other people say are impossible. We need to push the bounds of human potential. Because that is our history. And when the planet has been in peril in the past, who came forward to save Earth from the scourge of Nazi and totalitarian regimes? We came forward. Who came forward to save the planet from, or continents from financial ruin? We came forward with the Marshall Plan. Our history is standing up and saying, look, humanity is in crisis. America is going to be light and the hope.
The urge to save humanity is really the urge to rule, as Mencken observed. Cory Booker is exhibit A on that. He is a flim-flam man with reheated audacity of hope rhetoric from 10 years ago. But let me just suggest one other thing. The whole aspirational thing. Aspirations are value neutral. They're morally neutral. It really depends on what you're aspiring to do. And aspiring to be a national socialist is not the same thing morally as aspiring to defeat national socialists, since he invoked World War II and the defeat of the Nazis. But this is the kind of rhetorical and subsequently policy overreach you're getting from the Democrat socialists. So again, where do you think Trump, but Republicans in general, people of good sense, should focus in terms of getting those less enlightened to dismiss all of these folks categorically who are over the edge in all of the categories I mentioned: border, abortion, war on the wealthy, and AOC's GND?
For me, I'm going with A, war on infanticide.
That's where you think is the greatest overreach.
Yeah, because after watching Gosnell, I kept thinking, what's the difference between what Dr. Gosnell did and what the governor of Virginia wants to do, the legislation that he wants to pass to keep the baby comfortable while the mom decides whether or not she wants to abort the baby, but the baby's already born, so it's not an abortion, it's murder. So I just don't see what the difference is.
Well,
and now Governor Northam said he's been taken out of context, Dan. He said it's for babies with severe deformities and with, you know, possibly they might die anyway.
Oh, so
if they were to live. I'm like, oh, so now you're going to be judge and jury.
Beat him to the punch. That child could die. I'll tell you how we remedy that. Kill him.
Exactly.
That's a great way.
That it's coming, might be coming to Illinois, churns my stomach.
I don't think Northam quite understands the substance of the Hippocratic Oath he took, but that's a story for another day. Illinois, yes, you're right. Jelly Belly joining the competition with Cuomo Northam to be the most pro-infanticide governor in the country. Legislation, I understand, coming this week will include these four prongs: repeal parental notification for a minor with judicial bypass, repeal the late-term abortion ban, provide more funding sources by mandating more insurance companies cover abortion if they're going to provide policies in Illinois, and then fourth, allow non-doctors to perform abortions. And let me suggest something.
Non-doctors? Yeah. Your dentist is going to perform? I mean,
anybody.
Dentists are doing Botox now. Why not?
Yeah, like the teenagers that work for Gosnell, if you've seen the movie. Why not?
15-year-old girl becoming an anesthesiologist after 10 minutes of training.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
If you haven't seen the Gosnell movie, it couldn't be a more timely. It couldn't be a better time to see it. But here's the thing, too. Where is this happening? Yes, I know there are many states that provide for late-term abortions, and it's grotesque. But, I mean, in terms of this pro-infanticide and the political class sticking it in the face of the majority of their populations, I mean, even in states like New York and Virginia and Illinois, a majority oppose taxpayer funding of abortion on demand. 90% oppose the sort of infanticide that Ralph Northam described a couple of weeks ago. So why do they do that? They take up the unpopular to serve their base because Republicans in those states won't even take up the popular. This, the absence of electoral competition is why they feel they can have free rein to do the most extreme, grotesque, barbaric things. And so when you have an imaginary Republican Party like we do in Illinois, what is to stop Governor Spaulding and the other Chicago Democrats? Who's to stop them? I mean, hell, you probably have some Republicans sign on to this because their leadership, in quotations, will fold in. Bill Brady will fold in on guns. Jim Durkin will fold in on taxes and everything else. All these people care about is their sinecure, and they don't believe or, frankly, particularly care about ever being in the majority position to govern. So why not? That's what provides the encouragement for the Cuomos and the Northams and the Pritzkers to do what governors, even Democrat legislators in other states won't do because of the electoral competition at the state and local level. That's absent here. And so this is what you get. Will in Skokie, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, hi, guys. I think it's trans and gender issues is the thing where they're most out over their skis. The reason being is that most people don't really care much about politics and don't really follow politics a lot, but they follow sports. And so when you have these gender issues overriding into sports, if you've got, you know, guys going on girls' wrestling teams and so on and so forth and messing with sports, that's what's going to get everybody upset. Also, one more thing to you, Dan. AOC's degree was not in economics. It was international relations. That's where you learn how countries screw each other.
All right. Thanks, Will. I know she's always touting her background in economics, as even a BA in economics is really a background in most places. George in Libertyville.
Hey, Dan, I think by promoting AOC to the front of the GOP talking points, in one nitwit package, we get all of these topics called out. You know, you've got Cory Booker. We need to do better. Well, you know, give us a reason to vote for you. He has none. You have the woman that was just announcing her candidacy up in Minnesota talking about global warming at a press conference in a blizzard. You've got Cuomo now complaining that because of taxation in New York, everybody's moving to Florida from there, and their revenues are down, I don't know, $2.5 billion. So by promoting this nitwit who demands that Trump is a racist, and yet the lowest black unemployment rate ever recorded in the history of this great country, and they sit for that. So the moronic behavior, I think, is what we just need to bring to the front of the table.
All right, thanks for the call, George. I mean, that's what a lot of people, including people sort of on the center left, are saying is like, look, the only thing we need to do to depose Trump is not be crazy, and we can't do that.
Yeah.
We're incapable
Horses
of not being
left,
crazy.
Left the stable.
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Harry in Hawthorne Woods.
Hi, how you guys doing this morning?
Good.
Good.
All right, I would have to say I'd rank these in two categories. One is in terms of absurdity, and the other is in terms of importance. In terms of absurdity, I'd have to say the whole Green New Deal issue is ridiculous. The world's going to end in 12 years. And they as much as admit that to themselves, yet they say it's an ideal to be strived for. Everything the liberals seem to do is to approach things with, in terms of a denial of reality. You know, like the guy mentioned earlier, the transgender thing, to deny there's a difference between male and female. Come on. And then 12, you know, the world's going to end in 12 years unless we take away all the cars and airplanes and rebuild everybody's home from the inside out. Completely absurd. So that's got to be the top absurd thing. In terms of importance, I would have to rank the whole socialist agenda as probably the most important because that will bring down everything else. If the idea of socialism becomes accepted as a moral imperative, then we're doomed. Then everything's done.
Thanks for the call, Harry. I mean, that's right. And look, I mean, in terms of like this idea that they're creating this whole new world out of whole cloth, well, that's what they do. And this is why the language is so important. Again, first, the language is corrupted, then man is corrupted, as Emerson observed. And the whole point is you redefine institutions through language, you redefine reality through language, and then you create the heaven on earth that you want to create to save humanity, of course. It's always in the interest of some noble goal. And along the way, you're inhumane. That's the history of socialism in the 20th century, isn't it? Stan on 290.
Yeah, so I think the biggest problem is the AOC Green New Deal. And to be honest, there's actually, I heard, a power source on the moon if she wants to go mine that and get it done that way. Wow. Maybe they could send a Costa up there to cover it for her.
Very good. Thanks Maybe for the call, go. Stan. Uh-huh. I still think we could power the grid with her radiant smile. Mm-hmm. That just lights up. I mean, it lit up the House chamber when he gave the State of the Union, when President Trump gave the State of the Union, didn't it? Greg in Schaumburg.
Thanks, Dan, for taking the call. Hi, Amy. I'd like to elevate this to the theological level, knowing that we have to fight this on a political basis, but it is really a theology level, and there's no one that emphasized that more than Jeannie Ives in this Illinois Senate. One of the things that Dan will echo, I'll bet, when I'm finished, is that when you go to Catholic college and they make you take a ton of a theology and philosophy and mainly Aquinas, and you're doing ontology and you're breaking down being as being, you get to exactly what Dan was talking about just now, the importance of words. When you're taking being and you're redefining it all as Alinsky tried to do from your point of view, you control everything. So this really is a spiritual issue, and everybody on our side of the equation should be praying for the people on the other side, because as Aquinas said, you can't prove things by, you can't prove God by science. It's only a matter of faith. And that is something that is a leap. And they're not on our page on that. We need to bring them over. Only God can do that. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call, Greg. An excellent point, an intellectual point from Greg, as you would expect. Here's what I want you to do, Greg. You have a homework assignment now since you've invoked Aquinas.
You're on notice.
By 8 a.m. tomorrow, I want a report on my desk here where you distinguish Aquinas' ontological proof of the existence of God from Anselm's cosmological proof of the existence of God. And then we'll discuss it in the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow. Sean in Elmwood Park.
Case.
Well, you two eggheads work on that. Let me help you out, because here's what you're missing, Prof. All right? This is a wonderful admission by the baby slayers. Why do you need a doctor to kill somebody? Any scumbag can kill somebody. And I love the fact that it's also an admission to the wretched souls that kill their kids. They don't care about you either. Just slap a lab coat on any dimwit and give them a hanger. That's what it really looks like. That's what the face of abortion is. So I agree with him. We don't need a doctor. Get a janitor with a hanger. Because that's what you're doing. You want to dress it up and pretend it isn't there? It's like that fish-faced Moreno pretending to be a lawyer and a politician. It's all a scam and a fraud. And another thing, the probably heterosexual Cory Booker, you stole your little speech from Banana Hands Tony Robbins. Verbatim. Same kind of nonsense, because that's all a Democrat needs. A little lipstick on a pig. A little you can do it. Fly to the moon. And you'll do in for everything. You're morons, all of you.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Sean.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
On AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So, the dumbest man on television.
Okay, who?
I think it's just the dumbest person on television, Don Lemon.
Hey, easy on my girlfriend.
Yeah. Okay. Formerly, you know, your fungible magpie network affiliate reporter in Chicago. The TMZ caught up with him at LAX.
Yeah.
And they asked him about, you know, should we have more women running for president? Should we have a woman president because they're less likely to be embroiled in scandal than men? And here's what Don Lemon said.
Do you think at this stage women are safer bets, you know, for running for president just because they're less likely, probably, to have this sort of terrible stuff in their past?
Women are the smartest of the sexes and they always have been. And we would feel a lot better off if women were running things, more things in this country.
Hey.
And I mean that.
Yeah, he means it. He's not just joking around.
Well, if he said anything else but that, then he'd be doomed.
Then he'd be an adult. Then he'd be an adult. We're literally right now with this, like, is it anything girls can do, boys can do better, or anything boys can do, girls can do better? Are we in kindergarten? Are we like some bad dad humor at the dinner table? That's what you get from these people on cable news shows. It's pathetic. Oh, by the way, you know, as is often observed, the whole idea, women ruled the world, there'd be no war, except if you look at the annals of female presidents, prime ministers, political leaders. There's a high incidence of actually war because it turns out that the human condition is complicated to govern, whether it's men or women. So how about just like having a teachable moment to the adult? How about we focus on maybe character as something we look at when it comes to our political leaders, as opposed to pretending that character doesn't matter. It's just the positions you take. It's just the flag you're going to advance. And somebody's personal conduct doesn't matter as it pertains to their public duties. How about we discard that shibboleth and then we get better class of men and women in public office and in positions of authority? What about that? But that's an adult answer. Don Lemon and most of the his cable news watchers aren't prepared for that. And it's how you get sort of the telegenic cultural Marxist takeover with AOC and her ilk. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Mike Rechtenwald. He's a former NYU professor, and he's the author of Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and Its Postmodern Parentage. And also the upcoming book, Google Archipelago, this guy, The Digital Gulag and the Simulation of Freedom. Boy, I got to get this guy's headline writer. This is like New York Post quality. First he does sort of a take on Mel Brooks, and then he does a take on Alexander Solzhenitsyn. What range? Mike Rechtenwald, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So Springtime for Snowflakes, Social Justice and Postmodern Parentage, that seems to be particularly timely given, for example, the GND that was rolled out by AOC last weekend. Yeah. Does something like that surprise you, given the trajectory of college of discourse on college campuses for, say, the past 30 years?
No, it's totally par for the course because, first of all, it has no basis in any scientific, you know, economic theory. It's completely insane in terms of what it would do to the economy. It would utterly destroy it. And, you know, it's utterly socialist because, you know, I mean, just the indoctrination that's happening in colleges and universities is so intense and extreme and completely unnoticed, you know, for so long.
But here's the problem, it seems to me, though, in terms of, like, when does the pendulum swing, that question that people that actually believe in academic freedom and robust intellectual discussion hope for. The problem is the other side is being underwritten by us. So, for example, at Berkeley, campusreform.org had a story over the weekend, diversity-focused employees, that term in and of itself, diversity-focused employees cost more than $2.3 million annually, according to 2017 salary records at Berkeley, and that's everywhere. So how do we shift the paradigm when we're underwriting the other side's paradigm?
I mean, this is happening, you know, all over the country, as you said. There's this huge administrative glut in the first place, and then on top of it, they put this diversity, equity, and inclusion glut of administrators who are costing millions of dollars, and all, you know, some of them upwards of $1 million a year. And then, of course, you have, you know, a whole slew of them making $250,000 a year. There's most universities, you know, major ones. It has to be attacked by virtue of this. I've been trying to say this for a while. First of all, social justice ideology is a religion, and it is being indoctrinated. It is being used as a form of official doctrine in these universities and colleges all over the country. It has to be attacked at that level because we have to say, listen, this is actually an infringement of religious freedom because you are instituting an official religious creed in public institutions throughout the entire United States. This way we use the separation clause to get it out of there, to get it off the parapet. And, you know, people can believe whatever they want, religious freedom, but it shouldn't be an official doctrine. If you want to have a social justice university, you have to declare it outright. It would have to be private. That's how I would attack it.
Well, did you ever think that the Democratic Party would go so left and be this progressive?
No, I didn't. Actually, I used to be a leftist myself, and I wish they would. And now they have, and I don't like it at all. I'm surprised it's happening, and I never thought they would ever go this far left. No.
Well, so
did not see this coming.
Well, then, so do is it up to individuals like you and Brett Weinstein and Jonathan Haidt and Mark Lilla? Is it up to you guys that are sort of center left or used to be center left and understand the ins and outs of academia to reverse the tide?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take, you know, a defector from the left, first of all, you know, like myself, who know what's going on, exactly how these people think, what the thinking is that got to this point. You know, you're calling it cultural Marxism. I think it's very accurate. It is a form of Marxism put onto the cultural level. Instead of class being the issue, you have identity, and everything is about identity, 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 as you were talking about before. And there's this ranking on the basis of identity. The lower you are, supposedly, in this hierarchy of subordination, the higher you are on the social justice hierarchy, because they want to invert the entire thing. That's what the whole thing is about. It's an inversion game. Take the hierarchy that they think exists, flip it. That's why you have constant denigration of men, especially white men, because they deem that those people to be the highest on the hierarchy, and you have a constant adulation of those who are other. It's cultural Marxism. That's a good way of describing it.
And so then layer on the topic of your forthcoming book, Google Archipelago, the Big Five, yeah. Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, you know, throw in Twitter, and overlay that and the ubiquitousness of these companies and their centrality in our lives, coming from the same perspective as the college professor.
They are. This is just amazing to me. I'm calling this corporate leftism. There, what I see here is that leftism has become adopted by, of course, big digital, as you can see, is not only from their internal culture, but their procedures, their policies, and the ways they treat the positions outside of their culture. For, you know, their complete bias, and of course, their the way that they treat anybody but leftists and the way they treated people other than leftists at their own headquarters, you know, like at Google, where James Damore was fired for saying there was a difference between men and women, and that might affect their choices of being, profession. I mean, this is pervasive. So I'm saying that this is actually structured into the corporate ideological. This corporate ideology is structured into their entire program. I'm calling it corporate leftism. I'm referring to the Google, I'm calling it Google Archipelago because it does have a leftist sort of authoritarianism, just like the gulags, the Gulag Archipelago in the Soviet Union. It's a leftist authoritarianism.
And since Solzhenitsyn's not around to write it, I'm glad that you did. He is Mike Rechtenwald, retired NYU professor, two books, Springtime for Snowflakes, and the upcoming book, Google, keep saying the same thing. It's becoming a synonym, as he points out, Google Archipelago. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the books.
Thanks so much. My pleasure.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Did I win the free trip?
Oh, no. You can't win it because you're going on it.
By the way,
go to 560theanswer.com/passport and click the Enter to Win button. And we are giving away a trip for two to join us in Nueva Vallarta, Mexico, April 6th through April 13th. We'll be staying at the Maravel Residence Luxury Resort. 9 golf courses. It has all the bells and whistles. This property is gorgeous. But no, that's not about that.
Am I being inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame?
Oh, the broadcast, Chicago Broadcast Museum? No. Dan, you probably don't realize it, but every year the radio station orders promotional items, T-shirts, coffee mugs, pens, keychains. You've seen them.
Sure.
And
gotta
this
have
year,
the swag. Yeah.
The station has decided to order something special. They wanted to create an item that celebrated the many talents of one Dan Prof.
Oh, boy.
There was much debate.
A Swiss Army Dan.
About what kind of item to create, maybe a cigar cutter, maybe a shot glass, mm-hmm. but... All of those items were rejected. Instead, the station decided, Dan, to create...
A Snuggie? Dan Prof Snuggie?
No, your very own word magnet. That's right, Words with Prof word magnet.
Oh.
Highlighting your impressive vocabulary. So now our listeners can take this
surrender. Surrender is not impressive vocabulary.
Words with Prof. No, listen. They can take Words with Prof word magnet and create their very own Dan Prof sentences using words such as... vociferous, skullduggery,
yeah,
DC press corps, cultural Marxism,
yeah,
promulgate,
uh-huh,
revanchist, bromide,
yeah,
I got
good.
That. Yeah.
Way to go, Putin.
Tiny dancer,
yeah,
all that stuff. So listeners can, again, get their own Words with Prof word magnet.
I like
by
this.
Going. So you can get this by going to 560theanswer.com/wordswithprof.
Think
all one word.
Think about how much you're going to dominate Scrabble if you pick up one of these word magnets.
Yeah, so you get it again at 560theanswer.com/wordswithprof.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be giving away a few of these each week. So if you receive one and you make a Words with Prof sentence, post a picture of it on social media with the hashtag Words with Prof.
Yeah.
And we want to see what you come up with.
This is pretty sporting.
Like
I do like
this. Well, there's pictures of you. You know, you're jumping on a cigar. You're moving your hand.
I would have included disestablishmentarianism on the list because it's the longest word in the English language.
You just said a word, shibboleth.
Shibboleth.
Yeah.
And
what is shibboleth?
It's not on the grid.
No, I know because you just said it.
Well, I know, but I didn't just make it up. It's been a word in existence for a while.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Right. It's time for another edition of Words with Prof.
Ridiculous questions and general obstreperousness.
Now, what does that mean?
Obstreperous.
Yeah.
Noisy and difficult to control.
Sounds like those Democrats in Washington, D.C. Join us next time on Words with Prof.
Finally, the laugh track that I've been asking for 4 years.
And that word obstreperous is on the magnet.
Yeah.
This is really cool.
Obstreperous.
So, obstreperous, or that word too.
Yeah.
And just, cut the little words apart and you can have fun with this. So, again, to get your Words with Prof magnet, go to 560theanswer.com/wordswithprof, all one word.
Very pithy and compendious this morning.
Oh,
compendious.
There's
there
a Words with Prof acolyte right there.
Everyone's doing it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.